All right. Hello, this is Scott Price, and you are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. Right now, I'm joined with Rick Rozoff, manager of Stop NATO International. Thank you very much for joining me again, Rick.
And thank you for having me again, Scott.
Yes. Now, October 7th is the anniversary of the start of the war in Afghanistan. You know, and to mark this kind of a sad occasion, really, if you get down to it. We kind of wanted to talk to you a bit about putting sort of this historical context into this whole thing about the Haqqani network, because we have heard a lot about the saber rattling of the United States against Pakistan and their connections to the Haqqani network. So I guess where we should really start is, I suppose, the Soviet war in Afghanistan and sort of the creation of the support of American military to Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and the Haqqani network. So maybe if you could start there, Rick.
Yeah, the first Soviet troops came into Afghanistan December 24th, 1979. And within, weeks, I think within 2 weeks, the United States had gone to not the U.N. Security Council, as everything is deliberated upon now, but rather to the General Assembly, that is to, the world community genuinely, and, rallied condemnation of the Soviet Union for sending in what was initially a fairly small contingent of troops, in December. And even though it's a murky business, at the invitation of both factions of the then ruling party, the People's Democratic Party of Afghanistan, whatever the Soviet action was initially, we have to remember the troops came in without a shot being fired, either by them or by Afghans. So initially, at least, to characterize it as an invasion seems rather odd. But, that being what it is, I think we have to contrast the U.S. going to the General Assembly and rallying the world, against the Soviet Union, with then President Jimmy Carter stating this was the greatest security threat since World War II. That's virtually a quote. Yet a decade after the U.S. and NATO have come into Afghanistan, there's barely a peep heard around the world about what is not only the longest war in the history of Afghanistan. The Soviet troops again came in at the end of 1979 and left in their entirety in the beginning of 1989. As you mentioned, in 8 days, on October 7th, it'll be 10 years since Western troops have been in Afghanistan, with troop strength up to, as of a few months ago, 152,000 troops from over 50 countries. So that's the largest contingent of foreign occupation troops ever to be on Afghan soil. It is also, of course, the longest war in the history of the United States. In terms of continuous independent combat operations, it's longer than Vietnam. So we have a number of disturbing historical parallels here. And what we know, according to no less an authority on the subject than at the time National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, the United States was arming and otherwise assisting armed gangs in northwest Pakistan for attacks inside Afghanistan before the first Soviet troops arrived in the country. So I think we have to dispense with some revisionist history and with some fallacies about the nature, first of all, of the Soviet intervention. Keep in mind, at that time, the Soviet Union bordered Afghanistan. So destabilization of the country, much less, the coming to power of groups like the then Mujahideen or, their offspring Taliban, had a direct, effect on Soviet border security and so forth. In other words, the Soviet Union had a better rationale for intervening than certainly do countries like the United States, Canada, Britain, France, Germany, and so forth.
Hmm. Well, yeah, that is very interesting. Now,
at least the last two Secretary Generals of NATO, including Anders Fogh Rasmussen, currently routinely making statements like, the security of Europe, including Brussels, where NATO's headquarters is based, is affected by developments in the Hindu Kush mountain range, which, is a patent absurdity, but is, used as an excuse for this decade-long occupation and ongoing and escalating war in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking more about this support, because I think also, too, Brzezinski even stated that they were in Afghanistan way before the Soviets ever had a plan to even go in there, and they were
precisely to entice the Soviet military into Afghanistan, and in the words of Brzezinski and other U.S. officials, to give them, or you know, the rough paraphrase, to give them their Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, but within that is also the support of the exact same forces we are fighting in this war on terror, which is Muslim extremists. Talk about the support for Muslim extremists at this time, in the Soviet era.
If I could jump back 2 years, at the time, the commander, what's called the International Security Assistance Force, ISAF, under NATO command, and of U.S. forces independently, though in the interim, almost all of the 100,000-some-odd U.S. troops in Afghanistan have now been assigned to NATO, to ISAF. But the commander at the time, you recall, before he was scandalized out of that position, was General Stanley McChrystal, who issued a commander's report roughly 2 years ago that stipulated there were three main groups the U.S. and NATO were fighting against in Afghanistan. And one of them was the Aqata Shura Taliban, based in the Pakistani province of Balochistan. But the other two, very revealingly, were the so-called Haqqani Network and the Hezbi Islami Gulbuddin. The first is a group set up by Jalaluddin Haqqani, he and his son are still in charge of it. The second, the Hezbi Islami Gulbuddin, is that of Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. Haqqani and Hekmatyar were Mujahideen leaders, again, even prior to the Soviet troops coming into Afghanistan. They started an armed insurgency against the earlier Afghan government of Dawood. And they were armed and trained, or what's called Operation Cyclone, reputedly the largest covert CIA operation in the history of the agency. But as recently as 2 years ago, you have the commander of all U.S. and NATO military forces in Afghanistan saying two out of the three groups they are concentrating on fighting in Afghanistan were ones they had aided, abetted, armed, trained, and funded, a decade and a half earlier, or 2 decades earlier.
Right. If that does not boggle your mind, I don't know what will.
what's equally mind-boggling is the fact that very few people make mention of that. It's an inconvenient fact from the past that has been buried, as though the U.S. has no responsibility whatsoever for developments in Afghanistan since their Mujahideen clients came into the capital of Kabul in 1992, laid it to ruin, mortaring, shelling each other, and waging internecine warfare. There had been no damage in the capital during the entire period, probably 13 years of the Mujahideen War from northwest Pakistan. The capital had been left unscathed. As soon as America's clients marched in, they proceeded to, carve up the pie amongst each other and devastated large sections of the capital as well as the country as a whole, and threw the country into turmoil that it's never really emerged from. My argument is we're not only talking about a 10-year U.S. war in Afghanistan, we're talking about a 33-year U.S. war in Afghanistan that began through proxy forces like Gulbuddin Hekmatyar and Jalaluddin Haqqani and the other Mujahideen leaders.
I would agree with your expanding that time frame from the 10-year to, this is over a 30-year conflict going on. Now, as we move into more recent times, we are also hearing, this there's been some things on WikiLeaks and those kind of reports coming out about Pakistanis ISI being directly in contact, if not some sort of, in cahoots with the Haqqani network and elements of Al-Qaeda. Talk about that. This now all of a sudden this connection and the saber rattling against Pakistan.
Yeah, this is perhaps the most dangerous development we've seen in the last 20-year, what I call the 20-year war cycle that began with Operation Desert Storm in early 1991 against Iraq. In fact, for the last generation, the United States and its NATO allies and cohorts have been in a state of almost daily, military aggression against a country somewhere in the world. Whether against bombing of Iraq prior to the invasion of 2003, in Somalia, in Bosnia, and Yugoslavia, now in Libya, and Afghanistan, and Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen. The U.S. is engaged in counterinsurgency operations in the Philippines, and this goes on and on. And it's been 20 solid years, you know, correlating more or less with the fragmentation of the Soviet Union and the dissolution of the Warsaw Pact, you know, far from that bringing peace, you know, heaven forbid, you know, to the Pentagon, Wall Street, and the White House. It's given them an open road, if you will, you know, carte blanche to, you know, pursue military aggression around the world. But, you know, the fact that Pakistan's inter-services intelligence is accused of having ties with the Haqqani network is, you know, is laughable. I mean, when they abetted their American counterpart, the CIA, in the late 70s, throughout the 80s, and into the early 90s, in supporting precisely that group, they were okay. One should note, however, that both the Interior Minister and the Foreign Minister of Pakistan have recently pointed out, frankly, that the Haqqani network was not a creation of Pakistan, but of the Central Intelligence Agency. That's exactly how they put it. So Pakistan is disavowing connections with that particular one. They instead are accusing the United States and NATO of aiding a group called Tariqi Taliban Pakistan, which is the major Pakistani Taliban group, which has staged cross-border raids from Afghanistan into Pakistan. These are deadly raids that have killed several Pakistani security personnel. And the Pakistani government is firing back by saying, we are not supporting the Haqqani network, that's your creation, but you are supporting the Tariqi Taliban Pakistan in launching deadly raids into the what's called the federally administered tribal areas, Fatah, in northwest Pakistan. You know, where the truth lies here precisely, I mean, neither side is going to embrace or acknowledge, perhaps, you know, their ties to insurgency groups, but there's enough to be said for the Pakistani claims. You know, there's a statement, for example, early last year by, you know, the current head of state of Pakistan, Zardawi, who was on an American Sunday morning news program, and stated not about the Mujahideen, but about, if you will, their successors, Taliban, that the Taliban was a joint creation of ISI, Inter-Services Intelligence, and the CIA. This is from the, you know, the very pro-American head of state of Pakistan. You know, if on September the 11th, 2001, or at any time since, any American elected official or former one had got up and said something to the effect that we first of all apologize for our role in aiding and abetting, you know, what groups we now identify as terrorist organizations, training them in Peshawar, northwest Pakistan, to, amongst other things, blow up civilian airlines and you know, other acts of what can only be characterized as terrorism, and so forth. You know, the U.S. might have some moral standing. Of course, no one has said that. Not only are we not ashamed, you know, of anything we've done in the respect we're discussing, but as recently as 3 years ago, one of the more successful Hollywood films was one you'll recall called Charlie Wilson's War, which, though presenting the now deceased former congressman in question as a flawed but lovable hero, you know, applauds the fact that he armed the likes of Haqqani and Hekmatyar and so forth with Stinger missiles against the Soviet forces in Afghanistan. So, you know, right in the midst of the so-called war on terror, the U.S. is celebrating a man who, and, you know, people in general, who in many ways, you know, created the very monster they claim they're trying to destroy.
Yes, I mean, it is quite something when you, like, I mean, as you're laying it all out, like I said, it is mind-boggling would be one word that comes to mind. But looking, I guess, a little bit more into this, into the wider strategic interest into Central Asia, is it more or less that perhaps they did this? They just really want to maybe destabilize Pakistan, because I've heard that theory before, that Pakistan in a lot of ways kind of maybe proposes some sort of a threat that you know, potentially is that maybe the cause for this saber rattling against them?
Yeah, I'll be a bit anecdotal here. I have a friend who's originally from Balochistan, the Pakistani province, has been telling me for years he's convinced that the overall U.S. plan for Pakistan is basically the Yugoslav model, that is to fragment the country into its constituent provinces and, of course, the tribal belt in the northwest, to, in effect, cede parts of Pakistan to both Afghan and Indian mandates or something of the sort. I can't substantiate that, but there's certainly discussion in the Pakistani press currently, including by a lot of by several former military and political officials, that suggests that's one of the possibilities. The other, of course, is the U.S. has a contingency plan for seizing Pakistan's nuclear arsenal, and who knows what geopolitical plans ultimately are targeted towards Pakistan. But I think the most convincing argument you're hearing from the Pakistani government recently and from the press for the last week is that, much like Richard Milhouse Nixon of fond memories, attack on Cambodia in 1970 ahead of what was an announced withdrawal from Vietnam when things weren't going well, that the U.S. in effect, this is a Pakistani argument, the U.S. is in effect looking for a scapegoat to attach blame to for its setbacks in Afghanistan itself recently. And we have to remember, on September 13th, there was major fighting in the capital of Kabul. The U.S. embassy was attacked. NATO headquarters was attacked. And this is very reminiscent for somebody of my age of the 1968 Tet Offensive in South Vietnam, where the National Liberation Front launched an attack on the U.S. embassy. I mean, it was startlingly evocative of that development. And then, of course, you had former Afghan President Rabbani assassinated recently. You had an attack on the CIA compound in the Afghan capital last week, and so forth. So if you're an incumbent president in Washington, you're coming up for re-election in about a year, 13 months, you want to win, and the Afghan millstone is hanging around your neck, then it would be very convenient to blame somebody else for your setbacks and for your failures, and Pakistan seems to be the fall guy.
Right. Well, I think perhaps that's maybe more to it, but I mean, it's very easy to speculate about these geopolitical goings on, of course, I think we'll end it there, Rick. But thank you very much for coming on. As always, it's always great to talk with you about these things. And I guess for the listener that doesn't know, where can they get some of your writings or tell them a bit about Stop NATO, what it does?
Yeah, thank you. There's a daily email digest today. There are 25 items, for example, including items in South Asia, Afghanistan and Pakistan, but pretty much spanning the globe. And there's also a website, and they're both called Stop NATO. If you go to a search engine, type in Stop NATO, those are probably the first two that'll pop up. I invite people to subscribe to the email list and to visit the site. Both are updated throughout the day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, thank you very much, Rick Rozoff, manager of Stop NATO International. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, bye-bye.